I don't know why. I feel like I look weird down here in my basement.
Oh, I think you look great.
I think it's the cats. The cats
oh,
that are like
looming in on you.
I love the cats.
Mm-hmm. We all look weird in a basement.
Yeah.
That's a human problem, not a you problem.
Yeah. Exactly.
That makes me feel better.
You're listening to How I Met Your Monster, a podcast that explores the introductions to your favorite movie monsters. My name's Zach.
I'm Danny.
And I'm Casey.
And together, we dive into the world of horror to find out how filmmakers have introduced us to our favorite monsters time and time again. This is How I Met Your Monster.
You opened it. We came.
I met him 15 years ago. I was told there was nothing left.
Who are you?
Explorers in further regions of experience. Demons to some. Angels to others.
Call him Meatloaf.
Surprise, Sydney.
Come on, don't be chicken.
Hello, and thank you for joining us on a brand new episode of How I Met Your Monster. If you're not already subscribed to the show, make sure to do it now. You know how to do it. Hit the button.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Smash that like button, bro. Smash that follow button. just smash it, bro. But today we're talking about a movie and some monsters that strike a little too close to home in today's political climate, I guess.
Climate? World?
But we will get into that. We are, of course, talking about Red State from 2011, directed by Kevin Smith. But first, I want to introduce our guest for today. He's a writer, director, producer, and mental health advocate, Ben Davis. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Now, thank you. Ben, I understand you have directed some commercials for some big brands like McDonald's, Netflix, Sega, which I love to say. Sega.
Yes.
And Ben does the voice for the Sega commercial.
Sega.
Sega.
If you listen, so like we just watched Sonic 2.
Oh, man.
In like the opening, like the score when the movie's opening up, it has like this just, I don't know, they don't say Sega, but like you hear it.
It's
really cool.
Yeah. I can feel the ad executives at Sega just forcing that slowly on Paramount.
Yeah.
Paramount lackeys.
They don't need to hear it, but they should feel it.
Yes. Which, I just as a side note, Sonic 1 and Sonic 2 are really good movies. I enjoyed them.
I haven't seen the second one, but I love
them. Yeah, I haven't seen the sequel. Yeah, same.
Yeah, they're a blast. They're super fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're and technically monsters. I think
we I love cover them.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
We can
by like a loose definition of monster.
Ben Schwartz is a
Ben Schwartz,
perfect
yeah.
cast. Yeah. He's he's so good.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
But anyways, Ben, you have also written a sci-fi pilot that was highly acclaimed on the Blacklist, correct?
That is correct. Yes. Those rumors are true once upon a time. yeah.
We can close the case, guys.
It's called Watch the Skies. What is Watch the Skies about?
Watch the Skies. So I grew up a huge Spielberg fan. I'll just get that out of the way now.
Sure.
The original title for Close Encounters was called Watch the Skies. I also have been going through a lot of therapy the last 5 years to process my family baggage. And the crazy thing about Close Encounters that everyone forgets is that at the end of the movie, Richard Dreyfuss leaves his family. Like, you know, he has like all these kids and he's just like, well, I don't care. It's like a very weird thing that happens in that movie. that Spielberg's talked about a lot, but I was kind of dealing with like kind of reckoning with who my parents were around the time I wrote this pilot. This was 7 years ago, just because things in life happened that kind of changed my perspective on who they were, some for the better, some for the worse. And so I kind of re-engineered that plot and was like, okay, what if it was Close Encounters, except it was from the kids' perspective, and they were having to deal with Richard Dreyfuss coming back. So it kind of came from like fandom and from my own like parental like therapy stuff. It was like an interesting kind of genre mash that I got to take out some of my demons on. So it was fun. Yeah.
That sounds
very cool.
What a great idea, Ben.
Thanks.
And you do have a short film premiering this year, right? The Jellyfish Man.
I do. The Jellyfish Man. It's a really fun holiday suburban satire that follows two neighbors over the course of a night where things just go completely out of hand. We kind of took everything we love from American Beauty, What About Bob and Die Hard, and threw it into a movie. It's very weird.
And you're one of the best, like, elevator pitchers I've ever met just within the last like couple minutes. I'm like, wait, I want to see this.
Yeah. Well, it comes from having to pitch a lot of things that have never been bought. So,
Yeah. A lot of experience.
Yeah.
That's funny.
The Jellyfish Man got into the URA International Film Festival, and we found out yesterday it got into the Sci-Fi and Fantasy Short Film Festival in Seattle. That's part of sponsor.
Congratulations.
Brand. Thanks. Yeah. It was super good news yesterday. So we'll be playing at both of those fests this June. It'll be a good time. Yeah.
Awesome.
That's amazing. Awesome.
Well, yes. Congratulations. And also congratulations to you because you are here today to talk about this wonderful movie. Red State.
Let's give you a round of applause.
this very joyous family film.
Oh my God. Sorry, guys. So yeah, Casey, you picked this as our third and final inspired by true events movies that we've been watching. We started with Psycho and then followed up with Wolf Creek, which was also a joy. And so Casey.
Yeah.
Why?
Why did I pick it?
Now, let me go on the record and say that Kevin Smith is probably one of my favorite filmmakers of all time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not so much his movies, but just him as a filmmaker.
Okay, yeah. we should talk about this for a second, like the Kevin Smith of it all. Just because, you know, going into it, I was like, yeah, I know who Kevin Smith is and whatever. And I hadn't heard much of this movie. And so I was expecting sort of the Kevin Smith version of like what you would expect.
Sure.
First of all, it's not that. Second of all, I realized in looking at his filmography, I've really not seen much of his work. I've seen Zack and Miri, I've seen Clerks, and I've seen this, and that might be it for me.
Oh,
okay. Oh, wow.
So he's definitely a person, like you're saying, Zach, that I know more about him as a personality in like the film scene than I do his actual work, which was surprising to me when I was looking it over because I have this idea of what his work is. And I don't actually know what that means, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
To that point, Ben, just seeing those three movies, that those spell out so much of kind of like the rest of his filmography.
Yeah.
And like you both said, just knowing who he is behind the scenes and the way he sort of presents himself as a filmmaker and his approach to filmmaking forms such a story that when you go into a movie like Red State, it's like, oh, I can kind of see, when I know it's him, I can kind of pick up on little notes and like in his dialogue or just sort of like what he's trying to say and like the intensity in the way he's saying it.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's like, this couldn't be more of a curveball.
Sure.
Sort of his style and I guess like our expectations for what the movie ended up being.
Well, oddly enough, I read that he was pitching this film Red State and Zack and Miri Make a Porno at the same time to the Weinsteins.
Of course.
Because he had written them around the same time and they totally scrapped this. They're like, no one's going to watch that movie. And they went with Zack and Miri Make a Porno. But yeah, this was his first shot at a non-comedy movie.
Yeah.
And since then he has directed a few horror movies and more to come, which I'm excited about. One of my all-time favorites, Tusk. But
I can't do it.
Yeah, this was certainly a way to do it there, Kevin. It's like just dive right in.
In case you wanted to save this for later, I know you had mentioned that there was an alternate ending, so we don't have to touch on it if you want to save that. But the video you showed me where he's kind of pitching the alternate ending, that feels more aligned with like other movies he's done, like Dogma specifically, which I think he directly references.
Yeah.
Which is like, we're going to go a little dark, but in like kind of a whimsical, fantastical way.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like if he capped this movie maybe had he made a few more like aesthetic changes and creative changes to kind of fit a little bit more with the kind of fantasy element.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
I could be like, yes, totally. Kevin Smith, but a little darker.
Yeah, even
but
Tusk.
But you don't get any of that.
Even Tusk is like absolutely disgusting, but it's still kind of silly, you know?
Yeah.
So
like, totally. And this movie just doesn't have that at all.
That's definitely what I was expecting, was like a kind of self-aware, sort of campy horror movie made by someone who loves movies. And it's not at all. Mm-hmm. I actually enjoyed that it wasn't that because I liked being surprised. And this movie definitely does that well. I thought that was really fun. I appreciated how bold it was in a lot of respects.
That's part of the reason.
Yeah, I definitely didn't. I went into this similarly where I didn't watch any trailers. I'd kind of heard about it when it came out. I knew it was his like political movie and it was like pretty dark. But other than that, I literally had no idea. And John Goodman was in it. I remember.
Yeah.
Seeing him.
The cast is so stacked. Like,
yes.
Oh, my God. Pretty wild.
Yeah.
It's like pretty wild.
And I was watching like a behind the scenes thing on it today. And Melissa Leo had not won the Academy Award yet when they were filming this. At the same time, she was campaigning for the Oscars for The Fighter, which she ended up winning. And so they ended up having an Oscar winner in their cast and they didn't know it.
That's crazy.
Wow.
Real quickly.
Oh, Kevin, you lucky dog.
Speaking of Oscar winners, can we talk about the Oscars real quick?
Oh.
Let's freaking do it.
Yeah, let's go.
Is there anything to talk about other than Everything Everywhere All at Once?
yes. Jamie Lee Curtis.
Okay. Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Duh.
Scream queen of.
Duh. She didn't win
Zach's
for
like,
Halloween.
Forget that movie. Let's talk about Jamie Lee Curtis's performance. Oh, from that movie. Okay.
Also loved seeing the score from All Quiet on the Western Front be played so much over a, especially over like a show that
it's like
was
like a horror movie.
Yeah, yeah. The show and presentation was so heartwarming, and then like every commercial break, it's bah, bah, bah. It's like, so funny.
Watch if you dare.
Yeah.
The Oscars.
Yeah, exactly. It's hilarious.
That's such a good catch. Yeah.
Short round, anybody?
Yeah, Short Round, yeah.
Yeah, Ke-Huy Quan won. I mean, talk about legacy wins at this Sunday's Oscars ceremony. Mm-hmm. We had Scream Queen Jamie Lee Curtis nominated in the same category that her mom was nominated in for Psycho, another horror icon and dude. Scream Queen legend. So we have, I'm trying to think, Brendan Fraser wasn't really in any horror movies aside from like The Mummy, but
yeah, and that was leans more towards action, but
Encino Man.
Yeah, Jamie Lee's in Halloween, but I would argue that Temple of Doom is very much horror adjacent at the very least.
Yeah,
so
yeah, for
we
sure
we have two horror icons winning Oscars on the same night.
Amazing. So
let's do another round of, you know, round of applause are kind of like a theme tonight. Let's just clap some more.
But yeah, and Everything Everywhere All at Once is now the, I'm sorry, Casey, but it has surpassed Return of the King as the most awarded movie of all time. So.
I don't care. Return of the King is still the best movie ever. What are you going to do?
Casey, is that your favorite Lord of the Rings?
It is my Lord favorite movie ever.
Okay.
So yeah.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Also has ghosts and monsters.
Why is that interesting?
We could cover that movie someday.
I just like... I just cry. I'm sorry.
Oh, don't be sorry.
I just cry. Just, hey, he throws the.
I'm sure
he
we'll all share a cry later.
Throws the ring in, and then Pippin's like, Frodo, and then I just cry for like 20 minutes until the end of the movie.
You cry through all 8 endings of that movie.
It's amazing. I do. It's so good.
I love that movie. I'm just giving you shit, but it's a perfect movie.
Oh, that's all we do.
Yeah.
Give all the shits.
Right. Yeah, we can cover that movie sometime, Casey.
Yeah, I mean, Return cover of all King. Of them. We'll just, our next series can just be Lord of the Rings. I hope you didn't have a specific one picked out.
Oh,
how
no.
I met your.
Our next Lord series cannot be Lord Ring. Of the Rings because I have one.
Okay, I'm excited. So. We'll get there.
Okay, but I do want to get into talking about Red State. But as always, we like to talk briefly about some of the horror content that we have seen recently. Yes. Have you guys seen anything good, Danny?
I have seen a few things that I would consider pretty good. Okay. One thing I would like to point out to our listeners, I want to thank everyone who joined us for our Screamathon, which
yes.
was not last week, but the week before.
Yep.
Which is crazy to think. We watched all five movies back to back, five nights, five movies, in anticipation of Scream 6. We had a really incredible turnout. We had some incredible guests, including Ivatrice Littles, Darren Field, Laurent Chapman, and technically Casey, because you were only there on the opening night, our first night.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So
you're welcome.
Obviously, I watched all the first five Scream movies and then rewatched them. And then I saw Scream 6 twice. Loved it. And I'm catching myself because if I keep talking about the fact that I saw Scream 6, I'm not going to shut up. So I'm just going to move on to the next one. Like I had mentioned, I also watched Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, which Zach, I think you will be happy to know, has climbed in my ranking as what I believe is my favorite Indiana Jones movie.
I saw you post that and... I think you're crazy. I love Temple of Doom. It's the movie I watched the most growing up, but nothing can beat Raiders and Crusade for me. Those are...
You're not wrong whatsoever. I mean, that is a valid argument to have to say that those two movies are better. But
it's like you're not wrong, but you are wrong at the same time. It's weird.
Yeah, let me tell you why you're wrong, though. No, I had like a moment where the same thing with me. The movie that I watched the most probably was Last Crusade and then Temple of Doom. And Temple of Doom always sat kind of strangely with me, which I guess it did for a lot of people. It just had a weird tone. And also as a kid, it was scary and disturbing. So it was harder to digest, even though I loved watching and rewatching it. But I had like this moment where like light bulbs were going off. I was like, wait a minute, Short Round. He's so fun. Whoa, this opening is so bold and bizarre, and it's a musical, but it's also really fun and iconic. And we also have what I would consider, even though it's very simple and grounded, one of my favorite arcs for Indy, where it's the whole like fortune and glory thing, which is so simple, but like just kind of encompasses everything that he kind of represents in the most straightforward way. It has the best set pieces. It is horror. It's so funny.
Yeah,
it's just like it just, I'm like watching it. I felt like I was watching it for the first time. I don't know why. Maybe it was because Ki-Hoo Kwan won, so I was like just kind of falling in love with that character again. But I was like, oh, this is the best. If I were right now to want to put on an Indiana Jones movie, it would be Temple of Doom, and for that reason alone I had to re-rank it as my number one favorite.
That's so okay. funny. I watched Last Crusade in the last week as well. So I've been doing that too. And I really want to watch Temple again because I've seen it hundreds of times. And I agree with a lot of what you just said. It's such a fun movie. It's really interesting. Like Spielberg and Lucas, I think were both going through divorces when they wrote that, when they came up with idea. And so they were in a darker place in their lives and they wanted to take the franchise to a darker place. It's also weird that movie is a prequel to Raiders, actually.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is also so fun.
Yeah. And
it's like we want to really stretch out Indy's character. But you could have didn't have to do it as a prequel, but it makes sense when you see it like that. It's like, okay. I don't know. I just feel like a lot of bold swings were taken. And they didn't need to because Raiders was such a success. So for them to go there, it was like, I don't know, like it must have been so exciting to just be like, fuck it, let's do it. Fuck it. Like, I feel like that was the answer to everything. Fuck it, let's do it. And I would say it has one of my favorite laugh out loud moments, which again, I don't know why I never really noticed this, but when when Willie Scott, she does this very like limps. She's like exhausted and she kind of slaps Indiana Jones, but it has the same sound effect as like a really intense punch.
And when he gets her out of there.
I had like a giggle fit when I was watching.
She's like,
it was like, so it was like the stupidest, like, I was like, well, it has to be intentional. Like, they had to have been going for something there. So,
yeah.
Long story short, I appreciated it. And I nominate it as the best Indiana Jones movie.
Fair enough.
Doesn't have to win, but I nominate it.
I don't remember the last time I watched an Indiana Jones movie. Sorry, guys.
It's okay. It's okay. It's
I'm almost sure
it's a weekly, so we can cover it.
Yeah.
We will.
Oh, yeah. You're a Spielberg fan, so.
Yeah.
I mean, guys.
You've established that.
There's the Raiders of the Lost Ark poster hanging over my bed. So.
Oh, nice.
Oh.
Nice.
As I'm saying, Temple of Doom is better than Raiders. Ben's like sharpening a blade. He's like, okay,
yeah,
just keep going.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Encouraging my bloodlust for you.
Yeah. I have one more thing on Temple of Doom.
Oh yeah,
I would, please.
I would put up Harrison Ford's body as my most envious male body over even Brad Pitt from Fight Club, like in Temple of Doom. Harrison Ford is just like a fucking man, you know, like
he's just a man.
Ben, like, I had the same when he's walking out when he's like possessed. I was like, that's like should be the gold standard. Like, I don't know. And I'm comparing it with like what is considered the standard in Hollywood nowadays, where like everyone is so like almost like grossly cut, where it's like so inhuman.
I don't know. I mean, I was like, a lot of thin guys are in now.
That's true.
Oh no, and that's the
little
thing.
Little bean, string bean dudes.
Yeah.
The thing with Harrison Ford in that movie is he just looks like healthy. He just looks great. He just looks like he just looks good. It doesn't look fake or like I don't know. Like he doesn't look like he had things poked into him to
interesting
enhance.
Right.
It's really interesting because it's like he's clearly worked out more than he did for Raiders and Star Wars, but it's not like he's not like, you know, Chris Evans or something that's just where like his muscles have muscles and it's like, look at this.
It feels attainable.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
And that definitely is my favorite Indiana Jones outfit of all time is when he's got the one sleeve cut off and he's on the bridge and all that. Like,
it's so
that's
great.
The best outfit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
Ben, have you seen any good horror content lately? Are you into much horror?
I am. I would say that I'm like a kind of mid-level fan. Like I probably see the top 5 to 10 horror movies a year, but I don't see everything that comes out. I'm not like scrolling Shudder, like looking for random things. But I saw in the last month Knock at the Cabin and Megan. So... yeah, I thought they were pretty fun.
Yeah, both really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Knock at the Cabin was a wild movie. Like, he's...
It really is wild.
I really appreciate
it. I gave up on him.
Yeah, I get it. There's, like, swings that he takes that I think I appreciate him for taking them and for being willing to just, like, pay for them himself.
yeah,
exactly. You like always wonder if he's gonna go there, and then he goes there, and you're like, I don't know if I wanted him to go there. It's like, okay, he did it.
Casey, what about you?
Well, I saw Scream. I also went and saw 65.
Ooh, how was that?
I forgot that was out.
So it's only an hour and a half long, which is pretty short by today's standards because everybody makes like 2 hour movies now. So they like try to cram a story in that's like not really, you know, it's like
doesn't feel fleshed out completely.
Yeah, but I don't know. But they get there, I guess. But it was fun to see in the theater, you know. It was, I don't know what the trailer shows for that movie. What does the trailer show?
I think you know that it's dinosaurs.
Okay. Do you know why?
Well, no, it's like the trailer has him like he's like on a spaceship from the future or something and he crashes 65 million years ago or something. Okay. And then there's dinosaurs and a girl. Okay. And
so, but it was fun to see in the theater. Lots of jump scares, lots of dark. Oh, my gosh. Yes. I saw it with Sam and Matt and Matt hated it, but whatever. And Sam and I were fine. We're like, well, it was fine to see in theaters. You know what I mean? I'm not upset that I was here.
Yeah.
But Sam and I both kept like, ah! and like accidentally like hitting each other and, you know, like because originally we were supposed to go see Cocaine Bear, but I looked up the wrong day. So like we got there and Cocaine Bear was not showing at 7 o'clock.
Oh no.
So we were like, well, I guess we'll see this.
Yeah.
I think that's available on VOD now because I really want to see that. Like yeah, to the point where I was like, should we cover Cocaine Bear?
Yeah.
I want to see it too.
I keep forgetting because I have, sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you, Casey, but,
you're good.
I always go to the Alamo Draft House down the street.
Yeah.
Which has like such limited
movies.
And I forget that like all these other movies are playing.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh yeah, Cocaine Bear's out. 65 is out. Like all these movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So thank you for reminding me.
I also rewatched Nope, which.
Okay. I still have yet to see it. Oh my God.
Oh, didn't realize that. Yeah, it's Jordan Peele. So like the second time you watch it, everything is so much more intentional, you know, which is cool. I also watched the 2013 Evil Dead.
Okay, man, you were busy.
Which
you saw a lot,
you know. Well, because I had been so busy for the last 2 months.
On the movies.
No, because I had been so busy for the last 2 months, I wanted to rip my hair out, and so and technically,
are you going to tell us why you were so busy?
Oh no,
that's horror related.
Why were you busy, Casey?
I was making a costume and going to a convention to meet David Howard Thornton and Damien Leone.
Well, that's pretty dope.
Terrifier. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I made a little Art the Clown costume and
it's really good.
Got pictures with them, but, so I just, and technically we haven't actually talked in 3 weeks. So
that's right.
Yeah. That's true.
Scream takes over.
Yeah. But the Evil Dead, I probably haven't seen it in like 8 years and, you know, the Rise is coming out next month, which I'm really excited about. And so I watched this and I was like, wow, why aren't I watching this movie all the time? Because
it's very much a Casey movie.
Yeah, it is. It's so fucking gross and it's just so out there and it's like not like the original one at all.
Yeah.
In the campy fun aspect, you know? Which I love the original Evil Dead, but I really like this take on it too. It's just so serious and just, so
is that fucked. One the one starring Jane Levy?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
As Mia. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, and, Casey, that is a perfect example of like a Casey movie, but also a Danny movie.
Okay.
And I think it's just the ending. Like you have to like, if you end on too dour of a note.
Yeah.
It's not that I'm out. Like, I'll still watch. Like, I can still appreciate it, but I'm probably not going to return to it. I can rewatch Evil Dead 2013.
Yeah. Yeah.
Despite, like, how dark it gets, because there's, like, that sense of there's a light or a blood storm.
I mean, it's all just a metaphor for withdrawing from heroin, you know?
Which I love. When I knew that that's what it was about, I was so on board. I was like, what a great entry point into this type of movie.
I did not know that.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty
great. Well, because at the beginning, I mean, that's why they're at the cabin. So I just kind of, while I was watching it, I was like, oh, well, I guess they're just really
so
playing
clever.
Into that. Yeah.
I haven't seen watch that it again. Movie since it was in theaters. So I need to.
Yeah.
Guys, that was 10 years ago. How
yes,
fucked
it was
up
10
is
years
that?
Ago. I know.
2013.
I know. That's why I thought it was like 2017 or something like that.
Yeah.
Because Rise is coming out. I was like, it couldn't have been that long ago. But I guess even 2017 is 8 years ago now or 7 years ago now. But.
It's going to go the Scream route where you get like 10-year gaps in between movies. And then if the next one's really successful, we'll get like one every year.
Well, speaking of, I also watched The Last of Us. I finished The Last of Us, which the next season is apparently going to be 2 years.
What?
Oh, really?
No.
Yeah. I hope not. But it's also going to be two parts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man.
Guys, The Last of Us is just, it's so good.
Yeah, Danny hasn't watched
it. I'm still
it.
Behind.
Yeah.
I'm halfway there.
Yeah, I mean, the end?
It's...
Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
It's
well,
just...
Danny... Sorry, Danny. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
Because you
kind of
know what
Please.
Happens if I really like it.
Ben, did you finish this season?
I kind of had a feeling.
Yeah. I did. And I I love Craig Mazin so much. I mean, just from listening to script notes for
I was gonna say, are you a Script Notes fan?
10 years, yeah.
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 I was literally just listening to the new episode right before we started this. I was like, oh, it's time.
Well,
it's
so good. Oh yeah, it's Tuesday. I think last week's episode they talk about villains a lot. So
yes.
That's, you know, not exactly the same thing as monsters, but, you know, most villains are monsters in some way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Most monsters are villains, too. So, yeah. Well,
I'm really excited because the second game is very controversial. I'm not going to say why. Don't worry, Zach. Blah. But the second game is very controversial. And
they start putting the mushrooms on their pizza. Yo. It's like, whoa, wait.
Craig Mazin. Craig Mazin and, oh my God, why can't I think of his name? Neil Druckmann. Both have said, like, they're not changing anything. And they don't care what people have had to say about it and stuff, which I'm really excited about.
Craig Mazin seems like a guy who does not shit what people think. No. So.
Yeah, that checks out.
I'm really, really excited.
I did not play the game, but I did see several news articles saying that they refuse to change whatever happens in the second game. So good for them.
I'm intrigued. Yeah,
I agree.
I need to finish it. It's totally my fault too, because Cody keeps pushing me. He's like, "Are we going to finish it?" And I'm like, "I don't know if I'm in the mood for that right now." Like, it's just me being.
We've had to watch like Impractical Jokers or Drag Race afterwards because it's just so depressing.
Yeah.
On top of it also being depressing, it's so good that it makes you want to give up trying to make movies as well. So you're like dealing with two like different types of ego problems.
Well, never gonna get that far. Great.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly. Yeah. That's the point?
We've been watching it, and then like you said, it's over, and you're like, ugh. And so we've been putting on Curb Your Enthusiasm. And that show is
that's good, just fucking wild.
Funny.
Is that what's controversial about the second game? Is that Larry David's in it and he just comments on everything that happens?
Yeah,
guys. Also, speaking of round of applause, I want to give us another round of applause. I think this might be the longest intro we've ever had to an episode.
I know, Danny. You just are talking about this because you don't want to talk about Red State, but
yeah. But we have to because Ben only has an hour left.
I'm like, okay, so he needs to leave in about an hour.
You guys started talking about Indiana Jones, and like I was fucked at that point. Yeah, there's like, there's no getting me back from that.
Danny was peeping. He saw the picture in your bedroom.
Okay, the seeds have been planted. I'm going in for the kill.
Well,
Zach, did you mention
no
what you've seen?
No. No.
What have you seen, Zach?
Nobody ever asked me. Thanks, Ben.
Feel free to take your time and open your letterbox and look.
I'll be brief, since I do want to talk about Red State. Mm-hmm. I watched Scary Movie 4 for some reason.
Oh, that's weird.
Because maybe the first three,
maybe written by Craig Mazin. There's a good chance he wrote some of those scary movies.
Oh really?
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
That's because so funny. I downloaded the Roku channel so that I could watch Red State, and Scary Movie 4 was on there, and like the little thumbnail they had on there was like it looked like they were in the village, and so I was like, okay, I've never seen this, I'll put it on, and it was so stupid, but so pretty weird. Funny at the same time.
You can't not laugh sometimes. It's just so dumb.
It's like, I remember the first Scary Movie being like very goofy and, you know, a clear parody, but there was like sort of like a story that went through it. And like this had a story too. I guess what I'm trying to say is like in this one, it was just like gag after gag after gag after gag. Like every 10 seconds, there was something going on. And I don't feel like the first one was like that, but I could be wrong.
No, you mentioned the village. I haven't seen part four in a while, but I do remember all of a sudden they're just in a village. Like, there's kind of no reason for it. Like they're wearing like the clothes of that period.
Yeah.
Because Harvey Weinstein wanted them to be in a village immediately.
Yes.
Exactly. Thanks, Harvey. Great note.
I did see Scream 6 and I also watched The Last of Us. Two very good things. I watched a movie called Death Spa. Have you guys ever seen Death Spa?
Sounds relaxing.
Sounds good.
It's like a killer gym, right?
Yeah.
And it's like possessed, but
like a gym or a spa?
Like a hybrid.
Both. It's like a hybrid. Okay. It's like a health
club. Have you ever been to
okay, yes, health club. Mm. Okay.
You ever been to Encino? That's basically where they have what they have there.
Oh, really?
Huh. Oh. Sorry. Oh, an LA joke that didn't go over too well.
Yeah. I used to work in Encino actually years ago. Yeah. Sadly, I couldn't afford health clubs or good chilies.
Yeah. So.
I don't know anything about California.
There you go.
Well, that's why we're here. Casey, this is the moment we'd like to announce our spinoff podcast series where we discuss little nooks in various neighborhoods in LA.
Nooks
County.
In California?
So,
that's right.
Thanks for joining us.
I've been to Alcatraz.
Ben will be our recurring guest.
Yeah.
Oh, Alcatraz. Cool. That's a little.
I've been to Alcatraz. So that's about all I can say.
It's a little
far
north.
I've lived in SF for. Yeah. I've lived in SF already for a year and a half. Haven't been yet.
I've been to San Francisco. I've been to LA. I've been to San Diego. But I just don't know anything other than those places. You know.
Casey, you haven't been to a health club in Encino?
I know.
During your visit?
No.
It's a lot like Death Spa.
Yes.
seen Death Spa, you would know.
Yeah.
Which is a very bizarre movie, even for the 80s.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like they missed an opportunity because the poster for Death Spa is like, holy shit, we're going to see some nasty shit in this movie. And then it really doesn't happen.
Bummer.
But anyways. And lastly, I watched Orphan First Kill.
Oh, that's right.
Which
you mentioned
I have
that.
Not seen Orphan, the first one. But this
we
is
all
like
know
a,
how it ends.
Is it the same Orphan?
I don't know how the first Orphan ends, but I can imagine
it is.
After seeing this
I've
one.
Never seen either, but I know how the first one ends, but I don't know really much about.
I mean, I know end. The what the first one, I know how the first, it legitimately is inspired by a true story.
Okay.
Listeners, thanks for tuning in for your horror experts where we break down the Orphan universe despite never seeing it.
But this one, they did a really cool thing because the same girl who played Esther in the first one comes back and plays Esther in this one, but she's now 20 years old. And so
they did
some really cool camera work and, you know, in camera trickery to make it look realistic. And it looks pretty cool.
That's so fun.
And there is a very fun twist that kind of happens midway through in this one that I did not see coming. And it is just a fun watch, just a fun watch.
Right.
But okay, now on to the fun. Let's talk about
onto
Red State.
The fun. Yeah.
Now the mood's getting lifted.
Are you guys ready to meet our monster?
Let's do it.
My soul's prepared. How's yours?
Yes. Yes.
Does anybody know who Alvin Cooper was inspired by, the character?
No.
Okay. He's actually mentioned in the movie.
Is it the leader of Westboro Baptist Church? That's who I
was
guessing.
Yes, Fred Phelps. Yeah.
Phelps.
Yes.
Yeah, I had heard. Okay, yeah. I'm going to
shut up
because
I had heard
names thrown around, but I'm not familiar with them.
Do you guys know what like the standoff was inspired by?
No.
Was it the Waco. ATF standoff in Waco?
Yes.
I went to Baylor,
really?
Very familiar with that. And it
was
popping in my head as I was watching the movie.
Yeah. So Fred Phelps was the leader of the Westboro Baptist Church. He died in 2014. So they're still going, though. They're still going strong, even without him. They still, like, they actually picket at all of, at, you know, funerals for homosexuals, funerals for soldiers, because they also don't agree with war. So they actually picketed at Sundance when Red State was shown.
Of course.
So, which I thought was funny.
So meta.
71 members, and there's only one family that's not actually related to the Phelps family. And it's actually funny because this guy he actually wanted to make a documentary as an expose, kind of showing how terrible they were, and then he ended up converting.
Wow.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
So this guy Phelps, is he just, what's his deal? Like, where did he come from? Like, what was, I mean, you don't have to give me a whole origin story, but was he just a very convincing zealot who was able to just gather? Okay.
Yeah, he was like a lawyer. He was disbarred in the, in like 1989, 1990. He was disbarred for perjury, I think. And then, he just, and, you know, like I said, it's all his family. So it's not like he was trying to bring in.
Gotcha.
They're all related. All, besides that one family of 71 people, they're all related to him. So, yeah, they do the signs, the God hates F words. And their kids, like, you know, when they're 5 and 6 years old, they're all there doing it with them. And soldiers, they had signs that say, like, thank God for 9/11. Thank God for dead soldiers.
My God. Jesus.
Horrible. So, I always try to find, like, you know, especially, you know, when it comes to storytelling, you want to find that part of a quote unquote villain or monster that is grounded and relatable and, you know, like what moves them. And I try to do that with real people too, as I'm sure everyone does. But
yeah.
You know, find that source of like empathy, no matter how small it might be, but you can't justify any of that. It's like, oh, you're so far beyond like what I can comprehend any kind of like normal human being should be that I'm not even going to bother trying to empathize with you
because I mean,
you don't care. I can't.
Yeah. You're truly a monster at that point.
Yeah.
Like, totally.
You are like, you know, the shark from Jaws or something.
Yep.
It's like, yes.
You just want to feed. You're not thinking about it.
There's no decision making. This isn't about, you couldn't flip the movie and have that person be the hero. It wouldn't work that way.
Yep.
It's like, nope, this is just fucked.
Yep.
You know?
Right. Right.
They don't even have their own moral code. They just don't care.
Sorry. Yeah. I should ask what can, am I allowed to curse? I've been
oh,
doing.
Yes. Oh my God. Have you been listening?
Shit and fuck shit ass.
Great. I say really, really terrible things on this show sometimes.
Okay.
Zach leaves them all in.
We like to lead with a whole like.
I waited an hour in before I asked that question.
But, no, go for it.
Ben, you haven't stopped swearing and now you ask.
I know.
But so Westboro is based off in Topeka, Kansas. They're going to be at like the Comic-Con in April there, picketing.
They just want to go to Comic-Con.
Their website is still up. It is godhatesfags.com.
Oh my God.
Yep.
So boring.
Actually, they picketed at a soldier's funeral back in the 90s, I think. And they were, the father took them to court and he won like a $10.5 million settlement or something like that, but they couldn't pay it. And then they ended up overturning it. And the dad had to end up paying their legal costs because it was overturned. Yeah. Wow. They said it was freedom of speech. So,
not to go off on too much of a tangent, but there was a great episode on the very short lived Sarah Silverman show where she interviews an ex, what is it? Westboro Baptist. Thank you. Westboro Baptist Church. And this person basically has been out of it for years, but talked about, you basically, it's easy to understand why, like you said, like you're so young when you're brought into it. It's not hard to manipulate someone.
Yeah.
But it's so hard to get out of that. And this person, this poor, I can't remember what their name was, but like, and how sorry they were. It's just so heartbreaking because it's like, you do need to be responsible for things that you did, but at the same time, you aren't responsible for how someone fucked you up at such a young age. It's just, there's so many layers to it.
But once they leave, they're not allowed to talk to their family anymore either.
Good. I wouldn't want to.
Well, yeah, I know. But like the one woman that's left, she can't talk to her family. And she says like, she feels bad and she doesn't know why, but being around gay people still makes her uncomfortable. But it's, you know, she spent 18 years of her life being, you know, brought up that way. But
I mean, it's the same. I grew up, I have nothing against religion at all. This is just my personal experience, but I was raised a Roman Catholic and I kind of just grew out of it. You know, I was an altar boy, did all that stuff, but I just grew out of it. To this day, I still have like fears of like, it's sort of like a moral compass that is defined by sort of what I was taught. as opposed to like maybe what I would believe. Not that I wouldn't have a moral code, but it's like it's more based out of this fear in some cases.
Yeah, I know.
I always feel it. It's like, wow, it's so powerful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because like I grew up religious too, but now churches just make me really uncomfortable.
Yeah, same. I grew up very, very like, you know, went to youth group all the time.
And yep, me too.
All of that stuff.
I went to on missions trips and
yeah.
Yeah. And then that's when I fell out of it. But I got in trouble for having piercings in my face.
I remember you told us that story.
Yeah. I was just trying to spread the word of God, guy. Like, why does it matter if I have a hole in my face?
Yeah.
So then the standoff in the latter, the second part of the movie. Mm-hmm. Inspired by Waco. So the Branch
Sick
Davidians.
Bears.
Woohoo!
Yeah. Famous for biker brawls and chemical plant explosions and ATF raids.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
College football sexual assault scandals. You know, we really got
the works.
Yeah, it's good.
It's great down there in Texas. Mm-hmm. They're an offshoot of the Seventh-day Adventists. So it's just Christianity, but they do their worshiping on Saturdays instead of Sunday.
Whoa. I mean,
yeah, right. But the Branch Davidians, I mean, they basically just worshiped all the time. That's, you know, because they were part of a cult, and that's just what cults do, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. All right. So I have a lot of stuff here. Let's see.
Wait. Okay. So I have questions, Casey.
Okay.
So this is all inspiration, but
yes.
How much of what happens in the movie is sort of pulled from pure fact? Like, was the standoff that aggressive? Were there that, like,
it was, I guess, it was 51 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when they were shooting, back and forth, that was only like, that was probably 3 or 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
That was when the ATF went in to, so they had an inside person in there that was trying to get into the Branch Davidians. And they were going, they were told that they had stockpiled all these weapons and stuff like that. So the ATF was going to raid them and they couldn't find the compound. So one of the ATF agents asked the mailman where it was, and the mailman actually ended up being a Branch Davidian. So like when he asked where they were, then the mailman went back and said, "Hey guys, they're going to come raid us now." And so So they got all ready for it. The ATF rolled up. I think it was like around 100, give or take, ATF agents that showed up there. There were 118 people in the compound Mount Carmel at the time. They just started shooting. Of course, you know, Branch Davidians say that the ATF fired first. ATF says it's the other way around. So that lasted for 3 or 4 hours. A couple people on each side died. There were, I think, 4 Branch Davidians that died and 6 ATF agents that died. And then the FBI came in, ATF left and the FBI came in, and that was 51 days altogether. So there was a negotiator like Joseph Keenan, but that was not his name. Mm-hmm. So the tactical team was getting really like impatient. So on the 21st day, they cut off their power. On the 49th day, Janet Reno gave them the okay to tear gas everybody inside. So day 51, they started actually like ramming the tanks into the compound and setting off the tear gas. But nobody, like, they were expecting people to surrender, right?
Yeah.
After they started spreading the tear gas inside, then the compound caught on fire. But that was another thing that's like controversial. Branch Davidians say that the FBI ended up setting the place on fire. The FBI says that David Koresh did it. David Koresh is the leader of the Branch Davidians. I also failed to mention that. 75
But were they
people,
like collecting people like they do in this movie and like torturing and murdering them as sort of?
No.
Okay.
No. That was just added flair.
They just had the whole like all those weapons.
Yes, they were stockpiling weapons. Yes. Well, okay, so no, they weren't doing that, but David Koresh was like beating children and he had 15 wives that were under the age of 18 and he was molesting them and he was a pedophile. Jesus. And yeah.
Read is that he took, because there was husband and wife couples in this whole group, and he basically told all the husbands that they were like separated from their wives now, and he just like had free range to have sex with any of these women, and their husbands just had to be like celibate.
Yep.
Crazy.
And there it's fucking like, it blows my mind because like there's a documentary about it where they're talking to people who made it out. So after the fire, 75 people ended up dying in the fire, including children, like 20 something children. But 16 of the people in there had gunshot wounds to the head. So, you know, they did that first. But it's crazy. There's a documentary where like there's people who made it out that are still, that still consider themselves Branch Davidians and are okay. Man. Like this woman lost like 6 children.
Oh my
and she's
God.
Like, oh, it's God's will. It's, you know, that was God's plan. And, that's so, you know,
frustrating.
Yeah. And the one dad, like his daughter was 15 and she was sleeping with David Koresh and the guy is alive and he's like, oh, you know,
Casey, when I finished this movie last night, I was like, man, this is like a low, like, I don't think I could get much more depressed than this. And then we started talking today. And here we are.
Yeah.
I was
a little bit lower than I was last night.
My bad, guys.
I didn't realize that he had based it off of these things, but I thought of both of these while I was watching the movie, just without thought. I was like, oh, this is based off of Westboro. And this is especially because the movie came out in 2011. And I don't know if we just kind of stopped giving Westboro the coverage that we used to give them, but I remember them having a lot of coverage during the Bush years, protesting the funerals for soldiers who were enduring freedom and things like that. But
I remembered, I hadn't seen the movie in a while, and when I first thought of it, I was like, oh yeah, Red State's based off of Waco. I forgot about the Fred Phelps thing until I started watching it this time. But so yeah, that's it, guys.
I will say,
man,
fantastic performance by Michael Parks.
Oh, yeah.
I think my favorite thing about the movie in general is all of the performances. They're all very, very good. And from so many different places, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get a big range.
I love Michael Angarano.
Yeah.
He is.
Who's he?
He's just so good. He played Travis, the one with the little goatee. Okay. And man, he's just really. And then like Kyle Gallner.
Kyle Gallner, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because like I said, I hadn't seen this movie in a long time. I didn't remember exactly what happened. I thought that Travis actually lived longer than Kyle Gallner's character, Jared. I didn't realize that it was the other way around. So when he was shot, I was like, wait, is he actually not dead? No, I was just wrong. But
yeah,
that's where this movie threw me the most, because like I said, I didn't know where it was going. And you start off as like, I knew it was going into like horror thriller territory. But you kind of start off with sort of like this American Pie-ish kind of boys, you know, trying to get laid, like classic setup.
Oh, God. And then it becomes so gross.
A kidnapping, and then it becomes this like religious cult, and then it becomes like a standoff. So every time you like, it's jarring in so many ways, even narratively, you're like, whoa, where are we? I guess that must have been deliberate, and I guess it worked because I was jarred, you know, on so many levels. But yeah, really messes with your head, which I guess it succeeded. It did pretty well.
I was definitely not expecting or ready for all three of our like main teenage boys to be dead by like halfway through the movie.
No.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be like a them versus them kind of movie. Like these heroes, they're going to escape and it'll be kind of like, I can't think of anything aside from like Ready or Not, you know, where it's like they're sort of in the same facility and they just have to use their wits and their resources to kind of fight each other.
That's
which is funny because, again, not to Zach, I don't want to spoil the payoff if you talk about the alternate ending, but there is a kind of Ready or Not comparative similarity. If, just kind of funny. Maybe subconsciously I thought about that. But
I'll save that. Very curious about this alternate ending. I assume, based off of context clues now, that it has to do with this trumpet
thing
going a different direction. Okay.
It is
so
quite a
this
twist.
Was, yeah, this was a $4 million movie. Kevin Smith had his original ending, which he has said if he did film it, the movie would have cost like $15 million. And they just clearly didn't get that. They tried it. They tried for like 2 years, I think, to get that much, but it didn't happen. So they ended up getting $5 million, and then they got a rebate from California, so they got $4 million. But in the original ending, Aben Cooper, played by Michael Parks, and Joseph Keenan, played by John Goodman, they get really close to each other, right? At the very end when those trumpets are going off, and then it cuts to John Goodman's character talking to some other FBI agents or ATF guys. And you don't really see what happened. But in the original ending, Aben Cooper's head just explodes, right?
Oh my God.
And then his heart like shoots out of his body and his body like rips apart. And then all the other five pointers are the church members. Everything starts happening to them. Their heads explode, chest rips open, all that. Then it starts happening to the ATF guys and all this stuff. Heads exploding, blah, blah, blah. Bodies everywhere. Joseph Keenan, John Goodman's character, covers his ears and like passes out, right? He comes to and he sees all these dead bodies surrounding him. He looks to the left and there is a 10-foot angel in like knight and shining armor gear, right? And he's got this big sword and he's got the last church member. He's got a big sword right through their chest and he like splits them up the middle and they fall apart. So you've seen that there was an angel slaughtering all these people. And then
are you sure we're not talking about Indiana Jones today?
Right. Oh, and then he goes up into the sky with his big wings. And then you see the four horsemen of the apocalypse kind of like fly through the air. And then it cuts to black and we roll credits.
Okay. Danny, you said Mallrats, right? Or not Mallrats, Dogma.
Yes. Dogma. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he referenced, when I saw him talking about this, he referenced Ben Affleck's character in Dogma with the big wings. And,
okay. Yeah.
All that. So,
I think
fucking wild.
I needed that bookend to what we got in the beginning because Zach and Casey, we were kind of texting about this earlier, and I was just pointing out how I've mentioned this before, and you know, I'm not too sensitive. I understand context, and like if there's like a gay slur, or I understand, like I'm not gonna not watch something because it's going into this sort of territory. But I will admit that watching this movie, I like was so upset and like uncomfortable, like to the point where I was like texting Cody where I was like, I don't want to watch this movie right now. Like, I'm just like, it's like bothering me. I'm like watching a, do not like, I've said this again. I'll say it like, I'm glad I watched it. Like I want to watch these things. I'm very anti-censorship. You know, Zach, you kind of set this up earlier about how we were talking about this. You know, like I said, like movies are windows, you know, like they're windows into the good, they're windows into the bad. I want to see all the windows. I may not want to cross through the windows, but I think it's important that people understand, you know, what's on the other side. You know, these things are real, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
But it was still so jarring and upsetting.
Yeah.
That I think I'm not to beat a dead horse, but like I had mentioned that, you know, not everyone is having these conversations, you know, like we're actively talking about, we, you know, Casey, you pursue true crime things. You're interested in that. So, you know, so much darkness in the world, in the reality of like what people are capable of. In some cases, some people don't open themselves up to it, which is why I think these movies are important. You know, it exposes them. It shines a light on the bad. And I think it was almost so much. It's one thing to know it's happening, but to I don't want to say the movie was glorifying it, because I could guarantee Kevin Smith is not, he made a movie that is punishing these people. Yeah. It's not that. It was just sitting through it was too raw. And I think I needed that over the top bookend to this, mm-hmm. that button and stamp to sort of show how ridiculous it all is.
Right.
You know, in such a blatantly over the top way. Yeah. Like, we're going to punish these people, but we're going to go to the most laughable extremes.
Yeah.
And I think I needed that release. And I think I would have appreciated the movie more had it had that.
Yeah.
But like you said, like, money notwithstanding.
Unfortunately, the movie ended like, yeah, these people are still doing that. So, like, totally. You know, the movie ended with a very like, now they didn't get away with it because of the standoff and stuff. But, you know, Fred Phelps is dead, but Westboro Baptist is still carrying on. Yeah. So, yeah, I can understand.
And that's the thing is, like, I know these stories, like, the movie's not real, but I know it's based on real things.
Yeah.
And I think, and this is just me, this is totally subjective. This is just my personal opinion. Going into it, knowing that those things are real, it's like, I was like, I don't need the real ending. You know, I don't need the grounded ending. I need the extreme, punish those assholes, make them the butt of a joke ending because it's already too real. And I think that was just my take on it.
That's part of why I wanted to watch this movie, though, was that this is the realest group of monsters that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And not just on their side, on the side of the ATF and the FBI, too. Because, you're raised... You're told that these people are good people because they're part of law enforcement and they're not. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good exchange between that one ATF officer and Joseph Keenan, where he was like, he's like, these are orders. That's what we're doing because I'm not going to get, we're not going to clip coupons with my wife for the next 20 years or whatever. He's like, so I'm following orders. And he's like, dude, this is wrong. And he's like, well, just do it. And then the guy goes ahead with him anyways. And he's like,
and does,
use force. That
bothered
kill him.
Me so much.
It's interesting to me that like the movie, like we've talked about, does not try to have you sympathize with either the ATF or the church members. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting also that it doesn't really, it pushes them to such an extreme that it's almost like it's satire, but it's not, because the movie's not acknowledging it. It's playing it very straight. They feel sort of like stock characters, like stock, like I hate gay people, church members, and stock, like I'm a bro cop, without any sort of like winking and nodding of what they're doing. Yeah. Like everyone's playing it so straight. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes it so much more scary.
Totally.
Is like, we are getting like the worst ends of the spectrum in a movie, where things are lifted and feel bigger than life. But we're not giving you any sort of like nod that like there is a good sense of control behind this. We're just like letting their mischief and extremism run rampant, and it feels gross and awful in a weird, weird twisted way.
Right.
I think you worded I think you just encapsulated what this movie was perfectly. It was gross, and it was just, you don't want to see these people. You don't want to be with them. But the fact of the matter is they exist regardless.
And honestly,
what you want to see.
Yeah. John Goodman, I think, is our only like vessel. Like the kids suck, you know, they're like horny little assholes who are, you know, very much from a different way of thinking and have no respect for themselves or women.
I mean, they're, because they even use the F word. Know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought that was the worst of this. I took notes and I'm like, oh, gay jokes. I was like, oh, wow, we have transcended gay jokes.
Right. But
I'm going to ignore that note.
You know, I'm sure that's used in a way to like say that these words don't mean that much to you, but look at how they can be used by these other people in such a a terrible way. You know,
it's also just like we were talking about empathy. These are people who clearly aren't bothering to sort of understand what might be to them like the other, you know, anything that isn't the box that they fit into. So it's easy to You know, it's easy for the Michael Parks character to punish these people because he's so far from what they stand for or what they think or how they think, you know? And I think that's kind of what we're seeing too, is like no one is even trying to understand the other person or empathize, right? Because
right,
whether it's because of how they were raised, whether it's just like they're the culture that they're in, or just sort of, yeah, what they don't even bother to open themselves up to, mm-hmm, which is just as scary.
Yes.
Yeah.
Movie also takes so many risks. Like, that's like kind of a crazy thing. Everything we just talked about is kind of a crazy thing to do, like then or now. It doesn't really matter the time period.
Yeah.
He was, mm-hmm, you know, really talking about some pretty like audacious things. But to rest like the movie on these churchgoers who are going to feel extreme but have to feel scary, the only way he's able to do that and transfer it from this like, we're high school guys getting into trouble, yeah, is like to do this like fucking 15 minute long scene with Michael Parks just acting his balls off and like,
yeah,
you're just sitting on him like wondering like, is this scene still going? Like, oh my, yeah, God,
yeah,
it's insane and it's tense and, mm-hmm, oh man, that scene is just, it's fucking brilliant and it really sets the tone for the rest of, uh-huh, the movie. Like it's,
yep,
mm-hmm, and Michael Parks is, he can just, the way he, oh, talks, the way he just...
He could be a cult leader.
It's convincing.
Yeah. For, yeah, real.
Like he's
I was like, I was like, I don't buy any of this, but I still want to listen to him.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
And Kevin, yeah, Smith, so, kind of does the same thing with him in Tusk. It's not as long as this one, but there is like a long scene where he just has this monologue that just, you're kind of like,
yeah,
just drawn into it because just the way he presents himself. And
yeah.
Well, we were talking earlier about monologue. Pitching. And pitching is just like an art of convincing. You know, how do you convince, mm-hmm, someone to believe what you believe and see what you see in so many words? Because you want, yeah, it to be, brevity is so important. And when you have, when you're someone like Michael Parks, obviously he's an actor, but maybe you could say the same about the real life people who do this. It's just about like selling a product, like it's, yeah, so, and marketing. And it's, I think we sometimes like forget how powerful marketing is and a spokesperson is. You don't even realize you're thinking about something, or if it's like little by little kind of getting into your subconscious until it's part of your conscious, until it's part of your lifestyle.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's what cult leaders do.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to say that the ATF agent who kind of had that girl at gunpoint when she ran out the back and he like radioed, mm-hmm, and he's like, hey, what do you want me to do? She's unarmed. And then he like frames her, like he grabs her and shoots a thing so,
yeah,
he can,
yeah,
that actor is Mark Belukis and he went to my high school.
What?
Yeah.
Mark Belukis of Girard, Pennsylvania?
Wait, that's that crazy. Was he's from, that's the actor from Buffy.
Yeah, from Buffy, yep.
Mark, wait, Belukis. He's like the season, right, 4, like
I knew that.
Yeah.
Main Funk? Squeeze with Buff.
Yeah.
He okay. I think he graduated in either like 92 or 93 and then he like played basketball and then got a role in that Whoopi Goldberg movie, Eddie.
That's so funny.
And then
you
like
told me this before.
He exactly. just like took so off funny. And he's been in a lot of stuff, which is pretty cool.
Wow.
But one thing I just want to ask a question with the sure. original ending where the angels come down and slaughter everybody. Wouldn't that like
can't believe that's real
be giving Aben Cooper's like giving some validity to what he was preaching and which is like,
I actually,
yeah,
I have a take on that. I think maybe what Kevin Smith was trying to say is that, if there is a God, then these people are not worshiping him correctly.
Correctly. Yeah.
Totally.
That's what I was thinking.
Oh, 100%. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you're all doing it wrong. So
yeah.
Which I think yes. is later. So powerful. You know, even beyond like the ending we got where it's like you don't really you kind of get the fake out with the trumpet. It's like, no, there actually was no proof.
Yeah.
I love Ben's take on that, though. Well,
that's
I agree completely.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the thing about religion. But anyway, I loved Melissa Leo
mm-hmm.
and she was giving me Piper Laurie. She was giving me Piper
yeah.
Laurie and Carrie
yeah.
when she mm-hmm. said, "You get down on your knees and you pray."
yes.
It sounded just like
I
her.
Mean, is, that
yes.
like a, is that like Did she steal the line completely?
I mean, I'm pretty sure that Piper Laurie says that in Carrie, but and she says it, and she says it exactly like she would.
That's so
when she's
funny.
Yelling at her daughter.
I love that.
Yep. Yeah.
Her daughter, Carrie. The daughter in this movie. I was like, we can say that it's a classic, iconic name.
Yeah.
So now it's time for a segment that we like to call The Real Monster.
Run, run, run as fast as you can. You can't catch me. I'm the Gingerbread Man.
You're a monster.
I'm not the monster here. You are. You and the rest of that fairy tale trash poisoning my perfect world. Now tell me, where are the others?
Eat me!
Danny, what do you have for a real monster?
I have like the real one, which is all the gay sex jokes.
Sure.
I've already talked about this. I understand the context, but everyone had a joke. Like even the point where they were talking about like being like sexually assaulted in prison. I was like, okay. I was like,
yeah,
I get it. It's so, what a fucking, like, I don't know. I just didn't appreciate that. But the real monster, I would say, is the $15 million that did not pay for Kevin Smith's original ending.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Because we could have had something pretty special on our hands, and we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I still love the movie.
Oh, yes.
I gave it 4 stars on Letterboxd. I really liked it a lot. Yeah.
Good. Okay.
I really appreciated all of the... that I couldn't predict what was coming because the movie changed course so many times and no one was safe. We were willing to kill anyone, and that was cool.
It was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of I'm glad
and
you
the,
liked it.
And the performances were incredible. So
they are. Yeah. But when you told me that you weren't like with horror, you weren't totally like a hardcore horror fan. And I was like, oh, no. I was like, was this the wrong movie to bring back?
Oh, no. I'll watch anything. Like, and I there's some like... you know, cult classics that I really love. I just
Good.
I just don't.
You don't seek it out, maybe as actively.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Ben, did you have a real monster for Red State?
I do have one. The real monster is Nicholas Braun's mullet.
Yes.
Oh, it's not even a. Yes. Is it a mullet? It's a rat tail.
That's the thing we don't know.
In any character shop that ILM has ever done.
But do you know why he has it? There is a specific reason. It's because his name is Billy Ray.
Of course.
I didn't even put that together.
So
incredible. It's just mesmerizing. And the fact that that's really cousin Greg and he has whatever that is just truly, if we want to talk about something holy, then that's what we should be talking about.
That's a God-given rat tail.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so good.
Zach?
My real monster is the Second Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
End of story.
All right.
Love it.
You know what? Mine's the First Amendment.
Ah, hey. Oh, there you go. There you go.
They are both on trial in this movie. That's for sure.
Yeah.
My real monster is the goddamn Constitution.
Maybe we should rework it. I don't know.
I don't know.
Oh, geez.
You can't amend an amendment, Ben. Oh, wait.
Well, that is all the time we have for our episode on the wonderful Red State. Ben, thank you so much for coming on the show. We loved having you. This was a blast. Where can our listeners find you on social media?
At this.bendavis, because there's so many of me.
They're everywhere.
I'm on Instagram at WolfMotherCasey.
How wonderful.
You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Danny Salem. That's SALEMME. 2 M's like the candy, melt in your butt, not in your hands.
But there were too many gay jokes in Red State.
Hey, you can melt in a, you can put M&Ms up your butt and it's not a gay joke. I know plenty of straight men who have melted M&Ms up their butt.
Milked their prostate with M&Ms. Yeah.
You can find me on social media at Zach Quinsick. Okay, so Red State was the last in our Inspired by True Events trilogy.
Series.
Are you guys ready for our next category?
This is like a surprise Christmas present.
I'm so scared. Given the general sadness of all the last three movies.
What do you mean?
Means that we're not doing something sad.
Minus Psycho. I mean, it's kind of sad. I wanted to go in a different direction.
We're going to pivot.
My choice for the next monster that we are covering is Basket Case 3.
Oh.
And our theme for the next three movies is goofball sequels.
Yes. Oh, this is so good.
Do we have to watch the first two to understand the third one?
Who knows?
Okay.
Oh, I'm obsessed with this. Okay, this is so great.
I have seen Basket Case 1. It's weird. Yeah. And I just watched the trailers for 2 and 3. And 2 kind of looks like just like almost a continuation of 1. But 3 looks like it takes a huge swing in another direction. And so
Basket Case,
we're going to watch Basket Case 3.
Belial, right? That's the creature's name, Belial. Am I?
I think
so. I don't know if I'm mixing
it
up with
like,
the difference.
He's just like a head with like arms.
Yes, okay.
He's like.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh.
But Zach. So get ready for that.
All right.
Thank you all for listening. Now go meet some monsters.